This episode of Extra Serving is sponsored by Bel Gioioso Cheese. Bel Gioioso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh, local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses, guided by a commitment to quality and a respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Bel Gioioso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan. At Bel Gioioso, every cheese is a specialty. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving. I am your host, Holly Petrie, here with the latest episode. And I'm joined by two of my fabulous colleagues.
My name is Sam Okus. I'm editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I am senior food and beverage editor, Brett Thorne.
Oh, wonderful to have you back, Brett. It's been too long.
It's been a month, I guess.
It's too long.
Podcast. We talk a lot all the time. Why am I bad-mouthing your welcoming of me? Thank you, Holly. It is nice to be back.
It feels like true, Brett, that you were bad-mouthing me right away. It felt like I was right at home.
When you're trying to be nice, and I'm like, wow, we talk a lot. I don't know what's so interesting.
We might not invite you back, Brett. Be careful.
And then stop being a jerk.
Sorry. I mean, we were bad-mouthing L.A. once Lisa left, and we were supposed to bad-mouth Texas this week just for Ron, now that he's gone. So maybe we'll bad-mouth you next week once you're not here.
Sure.
Because we won't bad-mouth New York. I can't do that to my city.
I can do it.
And actually, what I like about New York is that New Yorkers can handle bad-mouthing it. Like, it's fine.
And it's also, New Yorkers bad-mouth New York, too. Plenty, right? I mean, come on.
Oh, plenty.
Yeah, it's a big grown-up city. So, you know, we can handle people talking smack about us.
We're grown-ups here, unlike the other towns and cities across the country, Sam.
So childish.
Flyover country, right?
Yeah. Although, you know, Create, our new conference this year, is in my hometown of Denver, which I used to badmouth Denver a fair amount. I mean, I did leave, but it's a really fun city now. There's a lot of cool things going on.
It is a fun city.
Hometowns are for badmouthing. I mean, when you leave your hometown, like, you got a lot of... So I went to college in my hometown, and so I had all these friends in college that loved it because they had gone to college partly because it's a beautiful little town. And I'm like, really, this place? Come on. But it's like when you grow up in a place, you have a totally different impression of it.
Right. And you know, you leave for a reason.
Yes.
Yeah. But also, I learned early on that you should never criticize somebody else's hometown or the city they've chosen, the community they've chosen to live in, because it's hateful and it hits people viscerally.
Yes.
To their face.
Sorry?
Just don't do it to their face. You could do it other ways.
Yes, obviously we can. How you act behind someone's back is not always how you act in front of them, and that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes things need to be said, but they don't need to be heard by everybody.
This could be a slippery slope, and I won't get too far into it because I know we don't like going off on tangents here. But I also believe this about sports, and this is something I had to come to terms with. As a Cleveland sports fan who got really angry at other teams' fans for the way they always won, those jerks, I had to come to terms with, this is the dumbest thing to be mad about anybody for. Why would you ever be angry for somebody to be a fan of a particular team? Let them choose their team, especially if they live in that city, and just be done with it. Pick a team and be fine. You know, I don't know. You have to have a point at which you just grow up and you say, I'm not going to hold grudges based on the decisions people make in that regard.
Absolutely, except for New England.
Right. Except for anywhere Tom Brady is.
Yeah, well, I went to college in New England, so I came to understand the fans there. Some of them are very dear friends of mine, and we don't talk about sports.
Well, I'm a born and bred New Yorker, so I hate New England on principle.
Right. Yeah, that's just a thing.
Although, you're not in New England, I hate you.
As a part of the country, it's beautiful. Really is. And great seafood. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, seafood. Well, before we get too deep into the weeds for seafood, which I could talk about all day, we should get into the news.
Let's do it.
Which is unfortunately not about seafood. So
Sorry about that, everyone. But this week, our biggest news was the CEO Palooza. We had a new CEO at Chick-fil-A, a new CEO at KFC, Dave and Buster's CEO left. Two of the biggest chicken chains are seeing new CEOs in the same week. I realize it's a coincidence, but I mean, it means different things for each brand. The Chick-fil-A new CEO is Dan Cathy's son, Andrew Cathy, who was an executive vice president, I believe, before taking the role of CEO. He was not in the C-suite before, versus the new KFC CEO was the COO before. Person of color, which is really nice to see. So there's that element as well, that we now have a little bit of diversity in the C-suite. A little bit, tiny little bit. But so what do we think about all of these? And Dave & Buster's CEO retired. No replacement has been named. What do we think about the changing of the guard at these companies? Do we think that it's going to lead to new changes? I mean, Chick-fil-A kind of seems like it's going to be within the same vein that it's been in. It's within the family. But what do we think KFC is going to start doing?
I think the interesting thing about KFC is it's on the heels of Pizza Hut also naming a new CEO, which, of course, that was kind of a long time coming because the previous CEO had departed a few months back. But, you know, purely because that's a lot of transitions within Yum brands. And so I ask myself, you know, whether or not, you know, is that a Yum thing? And not to say a negative Yum thing, but it could just be, you know, as Yum brands has been going through as much transition as any other company, you know, they're getting more technologically proficient and they're expanding and added Habit Burger Grill last year as they continue to change and they're the largest restaurant company in the world. You know, maybe it's some transition is just going to be a natural thing. And, you know, to your point about how he was the COO prior to now being CEO, I think that is probably a fairly common transition to elevate your COO to CEO because they're just so familiar with the inner workings of the brand. It's just a good position to be in to understand the brand really through and through. So I think a big plus for KFC for sure. As it relates to Chick-fil-A, yeah, look, no surprise there. Keeping this in the Cathy family. And one thing I thought, my sort of gut reaction initially was, I don't know how old Andrew Cathy is, but he looks fairly young. I would guess possibly millennial. And of course, Dan Cathy, I think, you know, kind of a boomer. That was the first thing that jumped off the page for me in that transition is, you know, Chick-fil-A has been really getting some technological upgrades. They've been innovating, you know, they've kept up with the times. And to me, this felt like a real significant, like, transition from the boomer to the millennial and recognizing that's where leadership is now. Now, I am sure Dan Cathy is going to be very involved, going forward, of course. But I thought that was just an interesting fact that, like, passing it on to his younger son, where he could have passed it off to probably some other older executives, you know, is significant. So I'm really curious to see what that might mean for Chick-fil-A for sure.
Well, and Chick-fil-A has been doing great. So if it ain't broke, you don't really need to fix it. There is, of course, the possible weak point that Chick-fil-A has, which is that they have in the past come out against same-sex marriage, which is something that, I mean, it doesn't seem to have affected their sales at all, but it does mean that there are people who feel bad about Chick-fil-A, a significant proportion of the population that feels bad about them. And bringing in a new executive might allow them to revisit that conversation if that's something they want to do. I mean, you got to do it gently because, you know, they're deeply embedded in the Southern Baptist Church and in Southeast communities in general. But even those communities in general have come a long way in terms of acknowledging LGBTQ rights. And so, you know, maybe it will allow for kind of a gentle transition away from some of the organizations that they've been supporting in the past.
Yeah, and they're a very quiet company as well. I mean, they perform so well, but they don't put out a lot of news either. They're very, very quiet. So I'm wondering if maybe this introduction will make them more robust in their announcements. I mean, they just came out with the new virtual brands, but there was very few details. And anytime Chick-fil-A gives you some kind of news. It's big news because they're so, so sparing in their what they give us as journalists and what they give their customers other than the food that people seem to love. So I'm also curious to see if they start to talk a little bit more.
And also the service. I mean, that's something they're known for, is a warm, very thoughtful group of workers that, you know, takes the extra step and walks you out to your car with an umbrella or whatever it is you might need. There are many, many stories of that historically, of Chick-fil-A really looking out for everybody.
And, you know, we do have Kalila Cooper speaking of Chick-fil-A at Create this year about their technology and how to really involve technology with your customers and new initiatives. So they may not talk a lot, but we do have somebody talking at Create. So she's going to really be able to give some good insights.
It'll be fun. We'll all get to network with her, which is the whole point of Create. You mingle and drink at high altitude, which can be fun.
Well, what a perfect segue to go into Hot Concepts, which we just announced this week, which is going to be presented at Create. We're going to have a panel with all of our Hot Concepts winners, but we did announce our 2021 winners this week. We sent out a newsletter. We're very excited about them. We are going to have a video series coming out later with everybody who's involved, but it's a really great group of people. We have Every Table, Agave and Rye, Zalat Pizza, Dave's Hot Chicken, and Slutty Vegan. All of us have been involved in the process of picking and writing and getting to know these brands. So what do you guys think about our 2021 class of Hot Concepts?
Yeah, I mean, I think they each bring their own thing to the table, which was kind of key here, which is, you know, there's no real overlap. Aside from four of them are fast casual, which I think is just a matter of identifying the fact that fast casual continues to be the hot category, and of course came out of the pandemic much more strong, in a stronger position than full service. Now I'd point out, so Agave and Rye, I'll start there, our lone full service brand, you know, really incredible that this company has, you know, they have 10 locations and they have, I think they've opened several of them during the pandemic. So clearly they bucked the trends as it relates to other full service brands. They were able to survive and much better. And now they're continuing to expand. They've got a really cool, funky vibe. So they have that going for them. Of the other four, you know, Slutty Vegan has this, you know, obviously really provocative name that was on purpose. They wanted to get people's attention, bring them in with this really unique comfort food, plant-based menu. And then Every Table, all about social justice. They've got this really cool franchising program to offer opportunities for people of color and provide them with the resources they need to grow. And then, you know, of course, then with Zalat Pizza and Dave's Hot Chicken, a little bit more of your standard menu, mm-hmm. I guess you could say, Dave's Hot Chicken with hot chicken, and then Zalat Pizza, of course, with pizza. And, you know, but they offer their own unique twist to the chicken and pizza category. So of the five, of course, again, you know, we're just looking at five really unique concepts, geographically diverse, really interesting trajectories, I think, ahead of them. And I think all of them bring something really interesting to the table, broadly speaking, for the restaurant industry to continue to influence what's going on beyond their own companies.
Well, and Zalat Pizza also has a lot of strategies for looking after their employees and making sure they're being treated well, which is something that I think all restaurants need to look at, whether they're really into their employees or not, because it's hard to find anybody to work in a restaurant. And so figuring out how to make sure your employees are well taken care of and to get them what they need is crucial to a restaurant survival at this point.
And Dave's Hot Chicken just got investment from Drake. So it definitely has the nice celebrity shiny element. They're franchising very fast. They're definitely a more traditional Hot Concept winner what we would pick in the past, in similar to like how we picked Shake Shack before they blew up. I mean, they are a tried and true Hot Concept, which is what's nice about Dave's Hot Chicken, is that we do have this one brand that has followed the traditional Hot Concepts trajectory. They'll probably be on the top 500 next year. They'll probably be in the top 200 in the next 10 years. Like they seem to be following that very tried and true path, but the others are a lot more about community and culture. And, you know, part of the new James Beard rules were including, how are you engaging with community? How are you doing culture? And I feel like we were we were inspired by that as well when we were picking these companies.
Yeah, although we picked them before James Beard Foundation came out with their stuff, that was the same social direction that I think that we all want to move society. And Slutty Vegan is also interesting because it is a Black-owned vegan restaurant, which is something that there are a lot of Black-owned vegan restaurants, and they've been under the radar. Last year, we interviewed Tamira Dyson, who has Solely Vegan in the San Francisco Bay Area, also Black, also vegan, and she was raised at least vegetarian without her family like talking about it. Her mom just wanted everyone to eat healthily, so she just cooked a lot of vegetables. And so it's a different approach from the sort of political veganism that I think often is what's present in the upper middle class white community where you see a lot of vegans.
And I think to that point, I mean, Holly, yeah, you're right. You know, Dave's Hot Chicken is kind of like is the perfect model of what you've seen in the past of the sure thing. I mean, we, you know, it's it's not a coincidence that this is a lot of the people who were behind Blaze Pizza before, which similarly rocketed to success in 5 years, had hundreds of locations, and fully expect that for Dave's Hot Chicken. And I definitely don't expect hundreds of locations, probably. Maybe, I mean, Agave and Rye, I think they want to get there. They would like to get to hundreds of location status, but for the others, maybe not. And that's okay. I think one of the things that's important to note with emerging brands, we talk about emerging brands a lot because a lot of attention on those, you know, up and coming concepts that I think are starting to really, you know, bring a lot of creative ideas to the industry that are really taking root. I think it's important to note that I think we're beyond the days of the $5,000 chain or 5,000 unit chain. You know, it's we're probably not going to get any of those to start up anymore anytime soon, because not only because of the competition, but because it's really hard. And because I just don't think that we necessarily, the leaders of these companies don't necessarily need to aspire to that. You can get to 50 locations, 100 locations, and make a lot of change in that system. So yeah, for many of these, for a few of these hot concepts that we've chosen this year, if what the change they bring to the table is in their culture, is in how you operate, is in the fact that you can prove that a Black woman can start a vegan fast casual and show other young Black women that they can likewise be an entrepreneur and start a restaurant and be successful, then that is change enough. And I think that we want to continue to recognize that change and not just look at it from a unit count perspective.
Well, and I think you can have a more creative menu if you're not creating a menu that appeals to everyone, which if you're going to have 5,000 units, you need to appeal to everybody. But if you want to do something that's a little more niche and creative and possibly localized, then you're going to attract a unique set of customers. It's not going to be everyone. And that's also awesome. You don't need to feed everybody.
You definitely do not, but my nice transition into your podcast, Sam, is somebody who has fed everyone is Monty Moran, former CEO of Chipotle. You spoke with him in a special bonus episode. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. So Monty Moran is going to be our keynote speaker at Create coming up October 4th through 6th in Denver. And ahead of that, I just wanted to chat with him to talk about what he will be talking about in his keynote. And that is all about culture and leadership and how you can build a team that's oriented around your people, investing in your people. He talks about love. He talks about love a lot, which sounds like this cheesy, corny kind of thing. But genuinely, I've read his book. His recent book is called Love is Free, Guac is Extra. I highly recommend it to any restaurant leaders out there. It's really inspiring. And again, like you think about this concept of love in sort of hippy dippy, but he really gets to a practical model of how caring for your team and genuinely showing them love, which can just simply be caring about what's going on in their lives, can be a model for success. And this is the guy that took Chipotle from like 200 to 2000 locations when he was the co-CEO. So we get into a little bit of that in the interview that we recently posted on Takeaway. And I highly recommend that if you go listen to that and are encouraged by it, definitely go also check out his book. But come to Denver, come to Create October 4th through 6th, because like I said, he's keynoting And there could be opportunity for you to direct, to do a direct one-on-one conversation with him there too, because I think he's going to stick around and interact with some folks. So Monty Moran, one last thing I would say about him is I read his book. I was a little bit starstruck when I talked to him, and, you know, we talked to a lot of big restaurant leaders, and sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, okay, just another CEO. But the guy was so down to earth, so authentic. I felt like I was best friends with him after we hung up. I'm like, wow, like I think Monty Moran's my friend now. I think you'll feel the same if you come check out that keynote too. So yeah, check out that recent episode of Takeaway. And I guess I'll just do my own segue into the most recent episode of Takeaway, which we posted this week, is with John Capasola, the CEO of Del Taco. Likewise, really great things to say about restaurant leadership. For him specifically, we really dove into innovations and how Del Taco has innovated through the pandemic, digitally especially. They just launched their loyalty program, which has one of the best loyalty program names of all of the loyalty program names, which is Del Yeah. And we get into, you know, how this digital innovation is opening doors for them, both in expansion, but especially in consumer engagement and driving customer frequency. So yeah, two recent episodes of Takeaway, go listen to those and subscribe.
And if you come to Create, please be nice about Brett's hometown of Denver. Be nice to his face and behind his back about it, because it is a very nice city. And now, Brett, who did you have to interview for this week's podcast?
I interviewed Kirk Biondi, the corporate chef of Huddle House, which is a family dining restaurant based in Atlanta with a bunch of restaurants throughout the Southeast, a very diner-like kind of place. So we talked about how he is evolving the menu in for modern times, and that includes obviously a bunch of off-premises stuff, things that you can take with you, like their new bowls and wraps, one of which sounds so good that I want to go eat it. It is the home style bowl that has sausage, gravy, skillet, potatoes, peppers, onions, and eggs. And I just want to sit down and eat that. We also talked about, you know, some of the ins and outs of menu development, like the importance of picking a name for something. Like if something has onions and peppers and is a little spicy, maybe you want to call it Southwestern, but maybe you want to call it something else. It kind of depends on what appeals to your customers. And there are so many different types of cooking that use similar ingredients that you can kind of adjust based on what people need. And we also talked about Huddle House's packaging, which they were lucky enough to roll out before the pandemic started. And the packaging has ribs on the bottom. So if moisture drips out, the food isn't soaking in it. So there's a lot of, you know, little details in R&D that I think people will find interesting. We did speak about a month ago. So, you know, there are a couple of things he said this will be out in about a week, and they're out already. So you can swing by at Huddle House and check them out.
What a great endorsement for them. And I'm sure everybody's going to be very excited to listen.
I hope so. Stick around for it.
This episode of Extra Serving is sponsored by Bel Gioioso Cheese. Bel Gioioso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh, local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses guided by a commitment to quality and a respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Bel Gioioso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan. At Bel Gioioso, every cheese is a specialty.
Kirk Biondi, how you doing?
Great. How about yourself?
You know, I'm fine. I'm good. And you are the corporate chef of Huddle House, a family dining chain in the Southeast, right?
Correct, yes.
And you've been there, what, like 9 months now?
Yes, roughly around 9 months, yeah.
And what were you doing before that? Is this your first chain job? I feel like it is.
No, before Huddle House, I was with Ted's Montana Grill. And I've also done a number of consulting, and I was with Tin Drum. It's a smaller chain. This is probably the most units.
when your background is more high end than family dining kind of diner food that Huddle House has, right?
Oh, correct.
And so, how did you end up at Huddle House, which is, as I said, it's a southeastern kind of diner concept, right?
Right. It's always an opportunity kind of came about. It just really intrigued me. I've always liked like family meals and home cooked meals. I come from a family of six, and then my family as well. I have four kids. I have three daughters and a son and a wife, and we do a lot of cooking at home. And it's just always really appealed to me to family style meals and just home cooked meals, and and breakfast segment in general has, you know, it's just it's one of the things in my house that we do a lot quite often is sit around and do cook breakfast together. All my kids cook. My daughter does pastries. My son is more of the he cooks more of the meats and stuff like that. And then my other daughter does pastries as well.
How old are they?
Well, my youngest is 8. And then after that, it goes up to 12 and 15. And then I have a 26-year-old as well.
And they all cook?
They all cook. It's I wasn't sure if I wanted to get them into it, but they all love it. And they all have the same passion that I have in it.
And do they want to work in restaurants?
Oh, yeah, they do. I'm not sure. My son actually... 15, he just got his permit, and he's probably going to be working at a local restaurant.
And you guys are where, in Atlanta?
Yeah, I actually live north of Atlanta, probably around about an hour north, 45 minutes to an hour, in Alpharetta.
Oh, that's close. That's one of the near suburbs, right?
Correct.
By Atlanta standards, it's a big area.
Yeah.
Ellen, now, like, they can definitely find jobs these days.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, the job market's definitely is open. That's why I was telling my son, I said, you find a job in this industry, you'll be able to go anywhere when you go to college and everything and get a job. I mean, there's always going to be a shortage in the restaurant industry.
Yeah, I was just contacted through my college alumni network about a young student who's graduating and, like, wants to pick my brain about going overseas to culinary school, and I, which I did, but I'm going to say, no, go get a job in a restaurant. Like, instead of spending money, you'll make money, and the restaurants need you, and they will train you and teach you whatever you want to know.
Oh, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Huddle House. You've been there for 9 months, and you have, you've introduced, like, bowls and wraps and upgraded the burgers. Why don't you talk about, give me an idea in our audience, an idea of what you've been doing for the
pandemic? Yeah, well, through the pandemic, everything, we've realized everyone's kind of craving more of the handheld and portable menu items. So, coming out with a line of bowls and wraps, one's more of a comfort wrap and bowl. It's a home-style Huddle House bowl and wrap, which is sausage gravy with skillet potatoes, peppers and onions, and eggs in it. And the other one is has a little bit of a kick. It's a southwestern bowl and wrap, and it has steak in it, peppers, onions, bacon, and skillet potatoes as well. And it's sort of a twist on like a comeback sauce, the southwestern sauce. It's a little bit of like a remoulade type feel to it, but we ended up with the southwestern. It's very good. It's it's gone through testing, and we're about to roll it out next week.
Oh, cool. And a comeback sauce is like a mayonnaise-based tangy kind of sauce. It makes you want to come back and have more. Is that right?
Correct. It's similar to like a remoulade. A southwestern appeals more to everyone's more familiar with it.
Right.
Sometimes it's about taking familiar ingredients and just there's all types of names, as for these sauces, and it's how you name them, but it's what it comes down to is the flavor that you put into that sauce or the ingredients that people, crave.
Right. Totally. But they're not going to crave it if you don't get it in their mouth. So you have to phrase it in a way that they're going to be excited about.
Exactly.
So what are the, I think you said already, but what are the southwestern flavors that you put in that sauce to make it?
Okay. So there's a little bit of ancho. There's, ghost pepper, a little bit of tomato paste, mayonnaise, And then there's a little bit of the of vinegar in there to kind of round out all the flavors. So you kind of get that heat with a little bit of tang to it.
And it makes people want to come back.
Yeah, it does.
Which both spicy and vinegar do, and the creaminess of mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. So that's coming on the menu soon, you said. It's in test now?
No, actually, we're going to be rolling that out in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, it's tested. It's coming out.
Correct.
And you also reformulated your burgers. Is that right?
No, we've come out with some different burger lines. Okay. So one of the things we're doing is we're in testing right now is I'm doing a bacon jam, which kind of gives that sweet, savory. It's a familiar flavor everyone loves, but it's just stacked on top of a burger with pimento cheese. That'll be going in testing. We also have a Carolina barbecue sauce that's actually in testing on top of a burger with fried onions. And so it's almost a line of these upscale burgers.
And so Carolina barbecue is an Eastern North
Carolina? It's with a mustard base.
Oh, so South Carolina, right? Yes. That's the South Carolina one?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's new because it's, you know, it's kind of common for burgers to have barbecue sauce and onion rings on them. I don't know why that's like a common combination, but it is. But that's usually kind of a Texas or Kansas City style barbecue sauce, and you're doing a mustard one.
Right. It's a little bit different. You know, I've always liked mustard-based sauces. And so I guess that's kind of why I kind of incorporated it. And it's, again, a little bit different.
Did you grow up in South Carolina or you?
No, I'm actually I've lived most of my life here in Atlanta and would travel back and forth because I had family in Chicago. I was born in Chicago and going back and forth. So my Italian side of family is up in Chicago. And so I'd visit back and forth. So I kind of have a good mixture of Southern food as well as, you know, the Northern food.
It's a great combination, especially if you have an Italian background. Is it a cooking Italian family? Do they cook a lot of Italian?
Oh, yeah. My grandma came over from Italy, and I learned at a young age how to make homemade raviolis and tortellinis. And, yeah, you know, at Thanksgiving, we have all your typical food, except for we have that as well. You know, and my grandma moved to, when she came to America, she went to Missouri before she ended up in Chicago, and there is where she kind of got a little more Southern, so it's kind of funny. You'll have incredible fried chicken, but, you know, could cook, you know, raviolis as well. It's always like a good balance of comfort food and Italian food.
Did she ever combine Southern and Italian? I don't know what that might be, but like fried chicken with marinara sauce or something like that?
Yeah, you know, she did. She would. And some of that came with, like, leftovers the day after where you'd mix things. Or making some of her salad dressings or vinegar, just mixing things up. You know, even with, like, a pork chop, you know. And similar to, like, a, you know, like a mayonnaise, but she'd put the tomato sauce in it with the pounded-out pork chop, you know. But it almost had, like, a Southern breadcrumbing. And she'd do it in a cast iron.
That's fun. So, and is that how you got into cooking? From your grandma?
Yes, that's how my passion for cooking. I think at a young age, it was just started out. You know, we would watching her cook growing up, and then the family coming around for, you know, we'd start out at breakfast, and after breakfast, we were like, okay, what are we gonna have for lunch, or what's coming to have for dinner, and, you know, and smelling the sauces that were cooking on the stovetop.
So you were not raised with the idiosyncratic South Carolina mustard-based barbecue sauce, but you like it anyway.
Yes.
So that's kind of an authentic way to like something, rather than it, you know, speaking to your childhood 5-year-old and saying, this is wonderful food because it's what you ate when you were 5. It's something that you came to later on.
Yes.
So I want to go back to bacon jam because you described that as, you know, a kind of a comfort flavor that everybody likes. But when I mentioned bacon jam, which is on a lot of burgers these days, people generally say, what is bacon jam? So how do you think it became something that you can now get in quite a few chain restaurants?
Well, I think, you know, having bacon in it definitely helps. But I think once you taste all the flavors together, you're like, what is this? You think of jam and you don't really necessarily think that, you know, it's not sure, but it has a tad bit of sweetness, which helps, you know, level out the whole burger. And I think it's something once people try because they're intrigued by the name, and then they try it, and they, it just becomes something, and they like it. I think it's how a lot of things start. You know, it starts out as a, you know, hey, you know, what is bacon jam? And I've had people ask me that, but after they tried it, they love it. You know, right. All the flavors go so well together, especially on a hamburger.
Yeah, a little. I mean, it's the idea is kind of similar to ketchup. You want something sweet and savory.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is in your bacon jam besides bacon?
Okay, so there's bacon, brown sugar, onions, and then there's also a vinegar in there as well. It gives that tang. Right. It's all just reduced. Those are the main ingredients.
And you just kind of cook it down, and you have a delicious bacony, tangy, sweet thing on a hamburger.
Correct.
So you joined Huddle House in the middle of the pandemic, right? About 4 or 5 months in. Am I doing my math right?
Sure. I think we were sort of coming out of it a little bit.
And so, you still had to adjust to the takeout delivery kind of needs of your customers, right?
Yeah. You know, we always had a pretty good off-premise customer base. You know, for us, it was just keeping up with that. Now again, we definitely, like everyone else, I mean, I think everyone's with the third party delivering and all that, you know, we've amped that up, and that's gotten bigger. But as far as off premises and everything else, that we've always been pretty good as far as that goes. But again, everything's kind of increased though.
Right. As far as sales goes. And you upgraded your packaging, right?
Oh, that was the packaging. Yeah, it was sort of when I came on. It was done right before I came on, and it was actually the packaging that they had is it's a little bit bigger of a box, but it has the ripples on the bottom to keep things from sogging out when they sit there and the, you know, sitting in the juice. So yeah, it's
so the ripples keep the food over the juice that's going to drip down and slosh back and forth.
Exactly.
So when you got to Huddle House, were you given specific things that they said these are things that you need to do, or were there things that you saw that you wanted to work on, or how did that?
I think it was a combination of both. You know, one of the things was starting to get the creative calendar back, you know, started back up, and right now it's just starting to hit. So that, again, that's why the Bowls and Wraps are coming out next week, but. It's also everything else that's in testing. So hopefully within the next, you know, 3 to 4 months, we'll have a line of LTOs and a menu things coming out. You know, it's just always, it's a time thing. It just takes a while. It's just a little bit of a process, but yeah, we're definitely moving forward, and everything's been going very well. That and you know, just in general, just looking at the operations and seeing what, if there was any things that could be simplified or menu items that, you know, we thought were, you know, that we would take off or keep on and stuff like that, you know, just coming out of the pandemic, stuff like that.
Right. Well, even as you know, as regulations are being lifted and people are coming out more. Maybe they'll go back in with the Delta variant. We'll see. But you'd still have labor issues, I'm sure. So are there ways you figured out how to simplify preparations, operations in the kitchen?
You know, maybe more so just in the builds, but in general, no. I mean, it's a lot of our stuff's cooked to order, so that's a little bit harder to do as far as, you know, when you're making, you know, pancakes and eggs and waffles. But yeah, I mean, just like anybody else, all the rest of the industry, you know, we definitely are down as far as labor goes. It's just an ongoing thing, and just learning how to you know, deal with it and kind of getting creative.
So how have you simplified the builds?
You know, maybe taking off an ingredient here or something that doesn't quite fit, or maybe just a change in the total build itself.
And Have your customers responded well to those little tweaks?
No, I mean, we haven't really done anything that's we've had in our restaurants yet.
Oh, okay. So this is stuff that people are going to be able to look forward to.
Yeah, we have a one restaurant in Pinson that has a smaller reduced menu that we've tested.
Where did you say that was?
In Pinson, Alabama.
Oh, okay. That's sort of your test
store. Just to see how it goes. Yeah, we don't know where we'll end up with that. It's always a trial and error.
So what do Huddle House customers like to eat? What are like the most popular items?
I would say the most popular would be a lot of our breakfast items. You know, we do have really good burgers, but you know, our pancakes are delicious. Any of our breakfast entrees are just incredible. I would say most of our clientele is sausage and biscuits. They just sell very well. And our dinner's good as well. You know, we have a country fried steak. And a lot of, good items. You know, a lot of our items are very, stuff that you cook at home and very comfortable. And they're not always your next trend, but they're familiar items that people crave, but not necessarily maybe want to, have the time, with the busy schedules and to, cook this. So, that's why, the Huddle Houses are, great place to get these familiar items.
Yeah, people aren't necessarily coming out looking for an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So is your approach, a lot of corporate chefs especially talk about safe innovation, changing things in a way that aren't going to be too jarring to their customers. You can add a new item to a burger or maybe put it in a breakfast skillet, and that's something that customers are willing to try because it's not that scary. They're still getting a skillet or a burger. Do you take a similar approach?
Sort of. I don't know if I would say safe. I kind of try to put a flavor that I think that I would like incorporate it into there, or layer something, whether it be a cheese or whether it be, I'm really big on layering on foods and trying to hit all those different taste buds. And so, to a certain point, yeah, you're right. Just making sure that our clientele can relate to what we're serving.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to introduce, some brand new off the wall thing that people will not.
They'll understand,
Or that maybe they don't expect to get at a Huddle House. They might love Ethiopian food, but if Huddle House put it on the menu, they would not think that they want it from Huddle House. It's not the reputation.
No, that's not what they're, yeah.
Right.
They're coming for a home-cooked meal is what they're coming to Huddle House for. They're coming for something that they would get at home, something that's served fresh and, to order, and it's, served in our kitchens.
So what is on the horizon for you? What next things are you working on? Are there new ingredients, new platforms, anything like that?
Well, yeah, that's what I was trying to tell you a little bit about. That was the Carolina and the bacon jam are the things that will be coming out here in the near future. I will also probably be working on some, I'll be doing some more menu development and have some more items coming out testing and probably in the next couple months as well.
Along the similar lines, burgers and breakfasts and things like that, or wraps?
Sure, yeah. Along the similar lines.
Are you continuing to do more handheld stuff or portable stuff like bowls and wraps and things?
Yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere. I think those are items that I think will eventually, in my opinion, could become menu items. And I think it's just a way of, maybe evolving and maybe becoming a bigger category.
Well, yeah, you said that Huddle House has always had a good off-premises business, and I don't think I realized that. I think of it as a place where you go in with a large crowd and sit and, eat your country fried steak or your biscuits and gravy or whatever, or maybe come in alone late at night after drinking, because the hours are pretty long, right, at Huddle House?
Some of them have shortened a little bit, again, because of labor issues, but yeah, I mean, We do have some locations that are open up 24 hours.
But there's always been a big takeout business, you say?
Yes, the to-go and takeout, yes.
And that's certainly, you know, something everybody was seeing even before the pandemic started, and it accelerated afterwards. Did you see that also?
Yeah, I mean, definitely there was an increase during the pandemic as well, yes.
Great. Well, you have answered all my questions, Kirk. It was nice to see you again.